Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast. I hope you guys have been enjoying the journey we've been on so far. This is going to be the fifth episode that I'm going to be recording, and I'm hoping that everyone is really enjoying the information that I'm putting out there. Once again, if you have any show suggestions, hit me up at hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com. HunterPoliceConsulting@gmail.com. You have any suggestions for show ideas? If you have any suggestions for people that you'd like to hear from, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, things like that. So I'm really looking forward to hearing from everyone. Once again, we're going to have a good episode today. You know, I've just kind of been brainstorming a lot of different show ideas because this is something that's really passionate about, and that is bringing the community and the police closer together. And nothing could be more important than video surveillance as we go forward in this day and in this time. So video surveillance has become such a hot topic, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Is body-worn cameras by police officers. Now, we may talk about some other type of video-worn surveillance and things like that in the future, but today's topic is going to be about body-worn cameras by police officers. Stay tuned for the journey. We're going to talk about some things. So let me just pause now for what I got going on. Remember, if you are a police officer or if you know anyone who wants to be a police officer, then hit me up on my website, hunterpolicetraining.com. I'm training police officers how to take promotional tests, how to score high and achieve that next level of rank that they are seeking after. So I'm looking forward to hearing from a lot of different people. If you want to become a police officer, you don't know the steps to take, then hit me up again, hunterpolicetraining.com. Look at my website, look at my bio, check out my services that I'm offering. It's really going to be important to get the information that you need to achieve what you want. So that's it. So hit me up at the website, check me out, let me know what I can do for you, how we can get together, and I can make some things happen in your life. I want to prepare you for your future today. I'm a retired captain from the police department, and I achieved a certain level of rank. I have a certain knowledge and skill set, and I'm looking forward to passing that on to up and coming potential officers. Now, this does not only pertain to police officers. If you're a firefighter, maybe you are a correctional officer, maybe you're a member of the military, and if you are and you're looking for some type of promotion, you're struggling with your oral presentations, you have an oral interview that's coming up, and you want to run through some tests and things like that, I can help you with those. So just hit me up and we'll just see what we just can discuss. Also going to be branching out very quickly, very soon. As a matter of fact, I'm hoping to do this within the next few months. That is doing full-scale background checks. And that is also going to be helping people getting their pistol permits. We've already gone through some classes and everything like that. But first of all, I'm a police officer, so I'm fairly proficient with the firearm, with the weapon currently. And I've also been doing what I have to do in order to get ready and prepared to teach other people. So it is going to be NRA certified, and the classes I'm going to teach are going to be NRA certified, so we can go forward from there. So that's what I got going on. So that's that. So let me just talk a little bit about what's going on in the news. Fairly recently, we heard of a rapper who was killed, a musician who was killed. You know what? What the heck is his name? Nipsey Hussle. Killed fairly recently. Now listen, I'm not even going to try to front like I knew who this guy was. I had to look him up. I mean, he was all over the news and everything like that, and all over the YouTube feeds. I didn't know who the guy was. I am personally fond of the music from the golden era of hip-hop. That would be about the year 1988 till about 2001, 2003, depending on which source you read. That to me was a best age of hip-hop. I still listen to that now. I still have it on my Pandora and still have music on my phone from that era. So I'm not very knowledgeable about this particular rapper, but I do think it's important to talk about why this is important. Obviously, it's another African-American male dead. He's 33 years old. He had, according to what I read on TMZ, I've only read two articles about this because I had to figure out who the guy was. So I only read two TMZ and I read the New York Times, and they said that he still had some ties to, I believe it was the Bloods. I'm not even sure which gang, the Bloods or Crips. I can't remember which one. I read it a few moments ago, but he had some ties. This is the problem that we're facing as African-American males when we're killing each other. We cannot expect for the other societies, other people in our societies, to care more about us than we care about ourselves. If we are shooting each other and we are killing each other, then this has to be something that we have to deal with and we have to do. We can't ask other people to come into our community and clean up our messes. We have to be responsible for cleaning up our own messes. And to make matters worse, if you look at the TMZ article, there is a post, I guess, with some guy on Instagram. Now, I hope and pray that this person was just kind of just talking. But he did a video post, and this is on TMZ, where he's bragging about he's the one who shot, called into some show, and is bragging about he's the one who shot Nipsey Hussle. Besides the fact that we need to clean up our own community, we need to be smarter about what we're doing. You can't be stupid. Now, as a police officer, I want this guy to obviously come in, confess, and everything like that. But our knowledge level, our understanding of how this world works, our wisdom, our smarts, that is not smart to do things like that. And let me just put it out there like that. This is not smart. What you're doing is not smart. Even if the police find you, what if the police don't find you in time? What if members of Nipsey Hussle's crew, his people, find you first? I mean, you're setting yourself up, number one, for jail time. And number two, you're setting yourself up for another possible retaliatory homicide. You know, none of this is smart. None of this is good. We're embarrassing ourselves. We're embarrassing our families. And, you know, then we want to cry and complain when other people don't want us on their neighborhoods, when other people don't want us in our schools, when other people don't want us on their jobs. This is why, you know, we got to get rid of this baggage. Now, one person does not bring down an entire group of people. I get that. But we live in a society which judges the many by the actions of the few. And that's just reality. If you don't accept that as reality, then we have no starting point in which we can talk. We live in a society where we think that one of them are doing it or a few of them are doing it, then they're all doing it. And they're all complicit in that. And they're all acting like that. And I don't want one of them, I don't want a few of them, because I believe that they're going to contaminate and pollute what I've got going on. And they don't want that. And let's be honest, those of us who are positive don't want that either. In whatever society you live in, whatever group or part of the country that you live in, none of us wants that. Let's clean up our act. I hope this person is brought to justice. It's sad to see another young person dead. It seems as if he was trying to do something with his music career. Apparently he was nominated and lost to Cardi B in some music awards. I'm not even sure. Owned a store and was killed in front of the store that he owned, in front of a young child. It may have been his daughter. This is sad all the way around. If it was his daughter, regardless if it was killed in front of his daughter, this young child may be traumatized for life for seeing this shooting. Two other people were shot along with Nipsey, who's the only one who died. This child may need therapy. If it's his child, you know, it's another child growing up without her father. It's very sad in multiple angles, multiple counts, and we have to do better. And we as a community have to hold these people responsible. We have to develop a system. Will we excommunicate people? Will we hold people accountable for their actions? Because your actions are polluting, diluting, and contaminating the actions of the many. And I think that this is terrible on many accounts, and we have to do better. We have to get our smarts up. So my thoughts and sympathies go out to Nipsey and his family, to the hip-hop community. I know many are mourning his loss. I'm understanding the game. Taking it hard. I know that the game is doing some very positive things. Well, the question is his music, but I know that he in his personal life is doing a lot of good things for the community. He's building up homes and things like that, investing in other opportunities. And so I hope that this is a lesson learned. We have to do better. It's one thing to rap about the game. It's one thing to put up this front. It's one thing to do that, but it's another thing to actually live this life. And we have to get out of it. You know, we lost two of the greatest of all time, in my estimation, and everyone's estimation, and that's Biggie and Pac, to this kind of violence, and we don't see what's going on here. And we have to lose this mentality. It's one thing to rap about this to make your way out of it, but once you're out of it, you need to get out of it and stay out of it. So that's where that is. So that's enough about that. My thoughts are with the family, and I hope that everything works out, and I hope they bring this person to justice, and I hope that there's no more retaliatory type of action taken. Where more people are losing life, more people are being harmed and maimed and lamed for life behind this seeming foolishness. So that's enough about that. So let's talk about body-worn cameras. As I was researching different articles and different things I'd like to talk about, the thought about body-worn cameras came up. You know, this came to my attention. I was reading about how Montreal, a fairly large police department, I think it's about 4,600, if the internet is right, 4,600 police officers in that city for Montreal, and they recently, I believe it was back in January, decided that they are not going to fund going forward with body cam. Very interesting, concerning that many police departments across, particularly across this country, are going toward body cameras. Montreal said that they're not. And there's a number of reasons that many police departments, Box, Victor, Ocean, X-Ray, VOX, which I read quite often, as you can tell if you listen to my last podcast, that a lot of police departments are getting away from body cameras. And Vox did a number of articles about many police departments choosing to go away from body-worn cameras. Now let's talk about why. First, let's talk about what obviously their evidentiary value and what good they have brought, right? These are body camera cases that I'm going to talk about right now, but they are cases where there's some type of video surveillance. Particularly the first one, which is the case of Michael Slager in South Carolina, where he was caught on camera. A video bystander recorded him shooting an unarmed black man, and then planting evidence. He was initially tried. It was a hung jury, you know, which is shocking that they could not get a conviction. He eventually pled out in federal court. South Carolina courts could not convict him. Federal courts had to convict him. He ended up pleading guilty to about 20-year sentence. It's incredible to me that with this type of surveillance that we have going on, video evidence proof of what's going on, that these people cannot get convictions. The Michael Slager case, when he shot Walter Scott. The second incident that comes to mind is the University of Cincinnati police officer, Ray Tensing, when he shot Samuel Du Bois. The whole incident was caught in his body camera. Pulled Du Bois over for not having a front head license plate. The situation starts to de-escalate very rapidly. Du Bois starts to drive away from the officer, and the officer then shoots him in the head and kills him. Now, he was tried two times, and they could not come up with a verdict two times. Two times they had a hung jury, two times mistrials. This is just shocking. First trial, they had two African-Americans on a jury. Next trial, they had three African-Americans on a jury. So this is African-Americans who have a very pro-police mindset about them, that they're not going to send police officers to jail. And to add insult to injury, in my estimation, I do think that this is a case of abuse of force, unnecessary force, excessive force, all that kind of thing. In both cases, the Walter Scott in South Carolina situation and this particular situation, Samuel Du Bois and Ray Tensing, I think that this is egregious, particularly because the incident was caught on camera. Shooting someone because they're trying to drive away, he was on the side of the car. Anyone who can go to YouTube and watch this. He's standing on the side of the car as he's driving away. He's not in danger of being struck. So why are you shooting? Why is it that you're going to the gun? I talked about this in previous podcasts. Why is it we're going to the gun? Call it in on your radio. I don't understand. Listen, I was there. I was a police officer, and I stood on the side of the car when people tried to drive away. People drove away from us all the time. What did we do? How did we handle the situation? We got in our car. We called in on the radio and we chased them for a little bit. You know, sometimes we caught them and sometimes they got away if our supervisor told us to break it off. Immediately going to the gun, going to your weapon, going to your sidearm is I don't understand that. I don't understand that as a police officer. I don't understand it. So, you know, maybe this is a training issue. I don't know what this issue is. He is currently, the federal government is currently investigating and looking into seeing if they want to press any type of charges for federal crimes, violation of his Fourth Amendment rights. So we'll see what happens. To add insult to injury, as I started to say before, he's going to get about $300,000, or he's probably, as of this podcast, already gotten $300,000 in back pay and for court costs, because essentially he was fired from the University of Cincinnati without cause, and they're going to have to give him back pay. He did have to resign, and hopefully part of that resignation stipulated that he would never be a police officer again. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if this is a training issue. I don't know what's happening across the country as far as training. I do think that we need to look into that. Some type of standardized training for all police officers. If you're a police officer, then this is the type of training that you need, and the federal standard of minimum that we need to have. So many hours of use of force, so many hours of other types of force, so many hours of medical emergency, providing a medical emergency, so many hours of laws of arrest, so many hours of search and seizure. These are things that should be a standard federal minimum that all police officers must have. That's my opinion. Back to what we started talking about with Montreal and this idea of getting body-worn cameras by multiple municipalities across the country. So let's take a look at why so many police departments are going to, let's look at the positives first of all. What are the positives of having body-worn cameras? Why should a police department have body-worn cameras? And let me be frank and honest and open about this. I want police officers to have body-worn cameras. I think that they should be standard and mandatory. That's my opinion. But let's take a look and see why they should. The benefits are the better transparency. Let's pause here for a minute. There have been a number of articles which have talked about this transparency issue. It should, in theory, have better transparency, right? So if an incident happens, we can go to the videotape, we can go to the body-worn camera video, and we can see what the officer did and presumably why the officer did what they did. There is a big problem with transparency. Many police departments, sadly, are not releasing the video. Police departments are refusing to show certain videos, and I think that that's a considerable problem. They are choosing when to release video. They certainly are releasing video which shows them in a positive light. And then when there's something that's questionable, they are refusing to show that. Instance in Sugar Land, Texas, there was a video of released of officers rescuing a woman from a lake. That obviously that shows the police department in positive light. However, when there was a struggle in which a man was beaten by officers and it was publicized and everything like that, they refused to let that video go. And the excuse is always that these incidents are under review, they don't want to compromise the integrity of the investigation and things like that. And this goes on and on and on. The AP News has a good article about that. So you can check them out. And it says, public regularly denied access to police officer videos. This was published by Ryan J. Foley, March 13th, 2019, AP News. So this is a problem. So if we're going to talk about better transparency, if you're going to show the good stuff, then you got to be prepared to show the bad stuff, right? And so there are transparency issues. The videos are supposed to be there for transparency, but when they are regularly denied, then this is a problem for that transparency argument that the cameras are supposed to bring. There is increased civility. So what that means is, this is another positive or benefit of having body-worn cameras. There is increased civility. So that means that police officers and the public, when they understand that they are being videotaped, then they tend to have a better attitude. Now, this phenomenon has been studied. It's called the Hawthorne phenomenon for anyone who's familiar with any type of psychology, for those psychologists out there who may be listening, or those who want to look this phenomenon up. We know that when the bosses are around, when there's surveillance cameras around at work or in factories and things like that, that the productivity increases. So there's a net benefit to having those cameras around. And so the same type of thing happens when there's cameras around and when the public and the police officer understand that they are under surveillance. The problem with this is that the different studies that have shown this have been from smaller departments, 50 members of the department and less, have shown that there is some type of civility aspect to this. The problem is that there's been a later study, and the largest study that I could find is by the Metro PD of Washington, D.C. What they found was when they outfitted 1,000 members of their department with cameras, and they did a control group where they did not outfit 1,000 members of the department. So 1,000 had cameras and 1,000 did not have cameras. They found no statistical difference in the amount of uses of force, the amount of civilian complaints, the amount of decisions to arrest, and the amount of officer compliance with the rules and regulations of the department. So there was no statistical difference. So this is another problem and another reason and factor why, for example, Montreal has not decided not to go to it. The reasons that Montreal has decided not to go to cameras is because of the expense, number one, and number two is because of there may be no benefit to it. If a large department like Washington, D.C., their Metro PD, is not finding any statistical variance, differences in how officers are treating people when they're wearing cameras and when they're not wearing cameras, then why do this added expense? In Montreal, they were looking at about $17 million, I believe it is, to outfit the department, and from there on going, because of storage fees and things like that, $20 million every year. It becomes a no-brainer as far as fiscally thinking. Now, some of the reasons that they believe that the researchers who did the Metro PD study for Washington, D.C. believed that there was no statistical difference. And this is probably them equivocating, but they believed that larger department, particularly like that of Washington, D.C., where they're used to dealing with dignitaries, they're used to dealing with different groups of people coming into their city, they believed that, you know, they had better training. The officers were more patient because they're used to all that kind of thing. Which may be true, you know, I don't know. That maybe Metro PD, who did have some issues years ago, they were shooting more people. I believe during the Obama presidency that they were shooting more people. The police department was shooting more people than any other city. So maybe they have fixed their problem, increased training and things like that. Increased training, increased supervision, as I talked about in my podcast about consent decrees. Let's continue on with the benefits. So we looked at their better transparency. Of course, that transparency has to be put forward to the people and for them to be able to see the videos. That's what otherwise it defeats the purpose of transparency. Increased civility, that's the Hawthorne effect. People know that there's something going on. People know that they're under surveillance, and so they tend to be on their best behavior. The quicker resolutions of civilian complaints. There have been a number of cases where people have decided to make a civilian complaint against a police officer for their conduct on a particular scene. The supervisor will then provide them with the camera, provide them with the video, and they can see what their action was. And they will say, oh man, that's not what happened. That's not what I remember. I'm sorry for wasting your time and the civilian relief. And that happened to me one time. One time I was called to a case. This is people were videotaping their neighbors, their interaction with their neighbors. And I can remember they were saying, you know, the neighbors were this, the neighbors were that, the neighbors were just out of control, this, that, and the other. They put the video camera on and all I saw was were the people holding the camera and their children swearing at the neighbor. That's all I heard. So I'm like thinking, and I'm saying to these people, listen, if I'm going to press any charges, I'm going to press them against you. You're obviously out in the middle of the street. You're obviously, you know, causing a disruption to your neighbor. Do you want to pursue this? Once I start talking to them like that, then the case and the issue is over. It's probably a little too much information, but hey, I'm retired right now, so I can say that. Let's keep going. So better transparency, increased civility, quicker resolution of civilian complaints. Corroborating evidence, right? So I just gave you a story where the evidence did not corroborate what the people were complaining about, right? If anything, it was going to be more damning and hurtful to their own case. And this is many a times the case with body worn cameras. Sometimes it helps the police officer and sometimes it helps the civilian. So, you know, prosecutors are now looking at this and seeing, you know, is there corroborating evidence of what's going on, and training opportunities. And, you know, we can see what the officers did wrong from an administrative point of view. Officers higher ups, the command staff, training officers can see what the officers did wrong and they can make improvements upon what they have done wrong. So those are the benefits of having it. And once again, I stand by having it. In 2014, there was a study and they saw increases in arrests, prosecutions, and guilty pleas. And they also resolves criminal complaints. So this is another, there's been numerous, numerous studies on the effectiveness of body cameras. And once again, that was a 2014 study. Another 2014 study from Arizona State saw a higher incidence of civilian complaints resolved. Once again, police officers are showing these people the videos and saying, look, hey, listen, this is not what happened. This is not what occurred. They also, that same study from Arizona State saw fewer complaints lodged. Rialto, California, another study from Rialto, California saw fewer complaints and decrease in the use of force, right? So the civilizing effect. Again, Rialto, I think, is a smaller department, but I'm not really sure about their size. 2016, they saw a decrease in use of force when officers activated the cameras when on scene, right? Another study showed that when the officers get there, their cameras are activated, they see a decrease in the use of force. 2017 study, Las Vegas PD decreases use of force when they had their body cameras. And I talked about the 2016, I believe it was 2015 to 2016 was the Metro PD study. There's numerous studies. You guys can Google this kind of stuff. There's numerous articles by Vox, numerous articles by AP showing the effectiveness. And there is the largest study, as I mentioned, is this one from Metro PD. Now, when Montreal says that they're not going to do it, the reasons that they're citing is the expense of it. As I mentioned, they were looking at $17.4 million over 5 years. That was just to get everyone in the department outfitted with them, right, and maintenance and all that kind of stuff. And they were looking at $24 million to run annually. And let me just also put this out there that the outfitters of the body cameras, the company that they were looking to said that was an inflated estimate. You know, take it for what it's worth. This is what the city said, and what their outfitters are saying, that it's an inflated cost. But there is a cost to it, and that is one of the reasons. So the reasons that people are getting away from it, reasons that police departments are moving away from it, is because of the cost. There's a number of reasons. Number one is the cost. As I mentioned, you have to outfit your department, you have to maintain the equipment, which is usually part of the outfitting cost. You have to, and then there's the storage fees, right? Many services, because of the amount of information that is being gained, imagine the amount of calls that Metro PD or NYPD or LA or Chicago Police Department, Houston Police Department, imagine the amount of hours and footage that people have to scroll through and they have to save and things like that. You have to have your retention records and how long you're going to save video. And things like that. So that is part of enormous administrative costs and financial costs that people have to weigh. You have to hire people, or you have to bring officers off the street who are going to be proficient in the editing and the redacting and the saving of this information. So you either have to hire people who are going to specialize in that, or you have to train officers to become specialized in that. That's going to take officers off the street. And so that's another possible expense, because you have to replace those officers who are on the street. So if you're going to hire staff, that's more of the expense of what it's going to cost to hire staff. If you're going to have it on a private server, then you have to pay for that upkeeping and upgrading of that equipment, making sure it doesn't crash and erase all of your videos. And so these are all the type of administrative expenses that have to go into it. These are the amount of details that have to go into whether you're deciding you're going to get and use video, body-worn camera video. Also, you have to look at changes in policy. What can and cannot be recorded? Are you going to redact people's names if the video is given? You're going to blur people's faces. You're going to blur people's addresses. Are you going to blur license plates? Are you going to blur little children's faces? Are you going to, you know, if you're going to go into homes, are you going to blurring everything? Once again, this is going to require specialized staff to have to keep up with that kind of stuff, that kind of redacting. What is going to be released to the general population? You have to have policy about that. You have to run that through your mayor and through your prosecutor to make sure that information is not going to be that sensitive information, which could jeopardize a case. Be it a civil complaint against an officer or a criminal case, is not going to be harmful to everyone. All that kind of stuff has to be looked into. You have to have some type of agreement with the union. The city has to come into some type of agreement with the union. So these are all the types of things that departments are looking into. Again, I'm not alone in my support of police departments wanting and having video. 88% of Americans support having body cameras. The effectiveness, however, is a mixed study, as I've mentioned to you, is a mixed bag. Some studies are saying it's good. Most of the studies that say it's good decreases in use of force, decreases in civilian complaints, are studies of smaller departments. When you get to larger departments, where I would assume that there's a greater diversity of people, there's no statistical difference in that. And I quoted to you the Metro PD study, which is probably the largest study that I could find. Also, there's been studies in the UK and Canada, and same thing has been found out, that there is no statistical difference in it on all that. One of the biggest downfalls of this is the whole thing about the transparency, as I mentioned before. The downfall is, when I say downfall, what I mean is erosion of the public trust when they cannot get access to the footage. That's number one. And the second downfall, or negative, is when civilians believe that the prosecutors are always taking the side of the officers and using that same video that's on the body-worn cameras in order to prosecute them, that they feel betrayed by that. I mean, that's their opinion. If a crime is committed, hey, listen, we got to follow the evidence. That's what you want us to do, is follow the evidence. However, there is a betrayal, and so therefore that continues to alienate many communities when they feel as if their police departments are not listening to them and just using this as another tool to prosecute them. So there you have it. I mean, this is a fairly short episode, I think. Let me just recap and just go over what we can do. One of the larger police departments, Montreal Police Department, has decided not to. Now, they weighed the costs. They did a year study. They weighed the cost. They weighed the financial aspect of it. They weighed the storage fees aspect of it. They looked at the effectiveness of it concerning how departments, particularly larger departments, are faring as far as there any statistical differences in the officer use of force, in the officer following guidelines, in the officer's decisions to arrest, in civilian complaints, and they found that there's really no statistical difference in any of those four categories that I just rattled off. Their estimation is, and their opinion is, why invest millions of dollars when we're not going to get any difference in all that? So I think that what the answer to that is, listen, I think the body cameras, you know, they paint a different picture. It's sad in the cases that particularly in the case of the University of Cincinnati officer who was able to be acquitted, or excuse me, not acquitted, but they were unable to get convictions in his case. I also think it's sad in the Michael Slager's case that the prosecutor from South Carolina was not able to get a conviction in his case. He did end up pleading out in federal court, and maybe the same thing will happen with the situation with the University of Officer Ray Tanson. I think that what both of them did was egregious and embarrassing to law enforcement. I think that it was, and you know, I don't know if it's, you know, one of the biggest things that is so frustrating and why officers don't get convicted is because there is such a pro-police bias. Maybe bias is too strong of a word, pro-police opinion. They don't want to believe that police officers can do a bad thing. They don't want to believe that officers have these biases and have these mindsets, criminal mindsets, when they're performing their actions. Maybe it is just a place of bad training. And if it is bad training, if you are not trained to do anything else but to use your gun, then I think that that's a problem. You know, I think that that's a problem. Is it a criminal problem? I would have to agree and say, no, it's not a criminal problem. It's just a training problem. But at some point, somebody has to be held accountable for our lack of training. You know, lack of training cannot continue to go on, and which the cities and municipalities are paying millions of dollars to families because they're not getting the police officers on the street are not getting the proper training that they need, and that needs to be fixed quick, fast, and in a hurry. Are there any evidences that people are using their authority as a way to kill black people? You know, there is no proof behind that. Now, I did my last podcast talked about this, the real threat, the infiltration of white supremacists into law enforcement, into the military. So I don't know what the deal is here. But there is certainly some type of deal that's going on. And this pro-police opinion that people have that they're not going to convict a police officer, in both of these cases, particularly in the Tanson case, two African-Americans in the first trial, three African-Americans on the second trial, and they wouldn't even believe that this man committed manslaughter or murder, right? So it was two different categories that they could have found it. Okay, maybe it's not murder. Maybe this man didn't wake up with the intention of killing this person, but his reckless actions, however they're worded in Ohio, however that the statute is worded in Ohio, maybe that is, you know, that is a problem. And so that's why I'm saying that part of what we could do is should do going forward in the case of body-worn cameras is see if your department has body-worn cameras, see what they're, you know, do some type of investigation, particularly if you're a part of a group, any type of community organization in which they have some type of advocacy for the police and making sure the police are performing professionally at all times. And so part of that group would be seeing how many civilian complaints come in, how many officers are found guilty, for lack of a better term, of violating some of their policies, rules and regulations, or even criminal law, and see what the department is doing about it, you know, and making sure you have to hold our people accountable. If that's the case, that there's a number of discrepancies and things like that, then what you should do is ask and inquire about what our police department is doing about getting or outfitting our department with cameras. If it's a need, then you have to look at the cost. You know, if you're a taxpayer and you want to spend that cost to make sure that your police officers are held accountable, then hey, that's up to you. And I think that that's a worthy goal and a worthy cause. I think that maybe also looking into federal grants to see if the federal government is still supplying, or even state governments are supplying their department with cameras. I know for a while the state of Connecticut was giving out grants to those departments that wanted. Eventually, though, these citizens, through their tax dollars, are going to have to supplement the cost for those weapons, for those cameras. Let me just wrap this up once again for the third closing. I feel like a preacher in church. If you see a decrease body-worn cameras, this is why: because of the storage that goes along with it. Many departments don't no longer want to store in-house. They want to use a cloud-based service. They use a cloud-based service, and obviously there's an expense to that. There's an expense to in-house service as well. But, you know, I'm not trying to equivocate on that. There's an expense to it, and anytime they're just not seeing the return. So I think that that's one of the biggest reasons. I do like the transparency. I liked all the elements that I talked about before. I like that there's better transparency, increased civility, quicker resolution of civilian complaints, corroborating evidence, and I like the fact that there's training opportunities. I think that the transparency's got to be there. If you're going to show the good stuff, you got to show the bad stuff. I think that increased civility, when it's happening, it works on both the civilian part, right? The civilians can't be there acting a fool, and the police officers also should not be instigating situations. I like that there's quicker resolution of civilian complaints. You know, sometimes people misremember, I like that there's cooperating evidence, and I like that there's training opportunities. Take a look at some of these studies. Check out some of these articles that are on Vox about the effectiveness of police cameras. And why, you know, I hope that they don't go away. The number one issue that I would say that police departments need is training. If we had better training, our selective process, for the most part, I would assume is very good. I think that one of the biggest issues now is training. Maybe I'll talk about that in the next episode or soon to come episode, that the training that has to go along with being a police officer. And the ongoing training. And I think that there's certainly a lack of training in the first instance, in the first threat, is to reach for our gun. That should not be our first threat. As I mentioned, I was out there on the street, pulled over people, and they took off. They took off driving, and they bailed out of the car and started running. My first instinct, my first action, my first gut reaction was not to put my hand on my hip and reach for my gun. It was put my hand on my left hip and reach out, grab my radio and radio my location and let them know that I was in foot chase. I don't understand why this is not the first reaction to what's going on. I don't understand. I can't get it. If it's a lack of training, if we're scared to be out in the street, then that has to be addressed as well. So listen, I'm going to sign off for now. HunterPoliceTraining.com. If you want to get some help with some promotional opportunities that are coming your way, continue to watch my website, get information about background checks, to get information about when I'm going to be doing pistol permit classes, particularly for those members in Connecticut. And I got some other things that are going to be coming along later on. So I'm looking to grow this business and business opportunities. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. Please, if you like it, spread it around. If you don't like it, spread it around as well. Let them know, hey, listen, this guy's an idiot. Listen to what he's saying. So maybe somebody out there someplace, somewhere will like it. Spread the podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your time. I hope everyone has a great day, a great week. Think positive. Don't let each other down. Keep on keeping on. Thank you. Take care. Bye.